Hey, this is Michael Sedini from Walk the Talk America.
Hey guys, this is Julie Golub with Team Smith & Wesson, and you're listening to the Armed Citizen Podcast.
From the Ghost Tactical Productions Studio, welcome to the Armed Citizen Podcast. And now your host, Trey Miller.
I am your host, Trey Miller, with Ghost Tactical Productions, and this week we've got a really fun guest. He's someone you guys probably remember from athletics and football, college football, for all you football fans out there. We've got someone here in Arkansas that made a big name for himself and across the country out at USC and all of that, but we welcome Mitch Mustang, and Mitch is no longer in Arkansas. He's living out in Arizona, but thanks for joining us, Mitch. Appreciate you very much.
I appreciate it, Trey.
For those of you guys out there that remember Mitch and remember the name, he was obviously a very accomplished athlete, but for those that may not remember, in 2006 out of high school here in Arkansas, he was a little bit of a legend. He won a couple state championships, played for Auburn's head coach right now, Gus Malzahn. And what was it like playing for Gus in high school? I mean, you know, do you see a lot of things that he does at Auburn right now that he was doing back there in high school?
Yeah, I saw a lot more of it early on. He's changed. He kind of gave up play calling, I think, for a number of years, maybe a handful or more, which got pretty frustrating. Gus is great at what he does. I always said that one of his greater strengths was tailoring his offense and what he does to his players that he has, rather than trying to force them all into a box.
You guys were probably – he was so far ahead of the game in the spread and on the run-pass option, what they're calling it now. But you guys were probably an advantage right off the bat before even stepping off the bus, just because you had someone with a mind like Gus Malzahn. Is that right?
Yeah, he's – I think, you know, genius, madman, there's a whole lot of – I think he searched the line on a lot of them. A lot of what he did had been around for a long time, and people point that out frequently, and they're not wrong. The thing that Gus did was he took it, he developed a system, he developed a really an ideology around it and executed it to a degree that it was in many ways infallible. I think that was a big part of it, was taking those things, formulating it into, you know, breaking it down to the bare bones, taking the things that work, that are high percentage, and then just beating them to death. When you have a team, you know, Alabama can have a system and they can get talent regularly enough that's good enough to run that system and not have to deviate too much. USC, when I got there in 2007, was a lot the same way. It had been the exact same since 2001 when Carroll got there. And even when I left, much of that had carried over. Even if it was pretty antiquated at the time, we had the talent where you could come in and get the guys to do it. Gus, on the other hand, never really had that luxury. So he basically stripped it down to what can I teach everybody as quick as possible. And then what he did that's a little bit different was just rep the crap out of it. We would run plays in practice until we got them right, and then we'd run them again and again and again. So I think that was the big difference. But yeah, innovating, always keeping something in your pocket, planning, running, and everybody does this still. But Gus was really good about it. We would practice stuff, we would try stuff in a game, and we just put it in our pocket. And we would hold on to it until we found somebody we knew it would work against.
For those of you, once again, that are just kind of trying to figure out what we're talking about here, we're talking with Mitch Mustang. This guy, and I want to brag on you a little bit, this guy, if you're talking about a resume, this is the guy that everyone in high school says they were good. This guy was the starting quarterback, the All-American game, won the Hall Trophy as a National High School Player of the Year, was named the Gatorade National Player of the Year, the USA Today National Player of the Year, and Scout.com ranked you as the top high school recruit for the class of 2006. And I know that you're a football star, you played professional baseball, but we're here to talk firearms more than anything else, and how this all started. For people that are interested, I was flipping through Netflix or Amazon Prime, I'm not really sure, and I saw this documentary called The Identity Theft of Mitch Mustang, and I was like, holy cow, yeah, where is he? I haven't, you know, I kind of lost track after you left Arkansas to go to USC, and I was watching this, and they're interviewing you, and you're like in a garage, I think, or something. I saw a bunch of guns on the back wall, and I was like, oh, he's a gun guy. And so, I mean, you know, understand that Mitch and I just met on this phone call, so I've never met him in person. He doesn't know who I am, but I reached out to him through Twitter and said, hey, I run a pro-gun podcast. Would you be interested? And he said, sure, and all that. So can you talk about maybe how firearms has been in your life? I mean, has it been something you've been around guns your whole life, or is it hunting, or how did you get started into firearms?
Yeah, I grew up, I grew up in the country, what is now a J.B. Hunt parking lot, but at the time was outside city limits and in the country, and we had a lot of land. And there's really not a time I can remember where I didn't have a gun of some sort, some caliber, you know, whether it was an air gun, you know, 22 rifle, a shotgun, et cetera. So, you know, we kicked off, it was a normal thing. I mean, they weren't locked up. They weren't, you know, we were very conscious of it. We weren't dumb with them too much. You know, it was one of those things that was just a part of life for us. And, you know, not like to sound like the Beverly Hillbillies, you know, we weren't out like, you know, shooting dinner, most nights, but, you know, it wasn't unusual for Saturday morning kickoff and before the, you know, the sun's just coming up and my brother and I, you know, trek off with our pellet guns and, or, you know, our shotguns and just go play around for hours and, see what we can get into and just, you know, like normal kid games, right? You just set up your own targets. You kind of find challenges and things to do. so that was it, man. That's how I got into that. It was, they were always around. It wasn't until I moved to LA 12 years ago that, you know, people would kind of look askance at you if you had, you know, like you grew up with guns, you just had them like around. So, yeah, it's just a normal thing. I've always had them. You know, I've done training, and I continue to, you know, do competitive shooting and training and as well as some other things, work related. So
when you moved to California, obviously you probably didn't take guns with you, but what was that transition when you realized there are certain things that you can't buy or the ammo restrictions, or what are some of the differences when you got out there? Did you shoot much out there?
Yeah, I did quite a bit. Later on, once I got established, you know, there's some decent, insofar as I hesitate to say good shooting ranges, there's good places to shoot there in terms of being in the city, where you can drive maybe a half hour. I forget the name of, there's one in like Santa, I don't know, Santa Clara, Santa Clarita, one of the places nearby. There's actually some really good gun shops there, which is surprising. I mean, the rules suck. At the time, it was a 3-day wait. I don't know what it is now. I wasn't old enough when I went there to buy pistols initially. Long guns are a dime a dozen, and actually some really good deals. ARs are really popular, and that's kind of what everybody's concerned about. So if you had a thing, if you were looking for, maybe a long bird gun of some sort or some sort of a classic gun, you know, the old Mosin Nagants were just kind of coming around at that point. You could find them in really good shape, unmolested for steel. I bought an M44, immediate post-war M44 for, I think, less than $200 with a big case of ammo. You know, the only restriction was a few day wait. Fortunately, it's no problem to get a California ID. So if anybody wants to go do that, that's not an issue. They've made sure of that. Other than that, you know, it's just kind of working around the laws. I mean, generally, like anywhere else, if you stay out of trouble, you know, people aren't going to harass you too much about it. I did buy my first AR there. I bought, my pistols I bought back in Arkansas, you know, on vacations or went on trips home, but not too big a deal. The weird thing, the thing that people don't seem to realize about California, to get off on this, you know, the demographics, you know, the policies are controlled from the big cities. So you have the Bay Area up north, you have LA, the LA and to a lesser degree, the San Diego area, but, you know, LA, Orange County area. But California is hugely rural, you know, in terms of the farms. You know, if you get out of LA an hour north, hour and a half north, all the way to the Bay, there's nothing but farms. And they're very conservative. They are remote. They are very 2A. So there's still a huge population. I don't dare call it underground. They've been pretty influential. The Cal Guns Foundation, which is almost like if you think of like Firearms Policy Coalition, but specific to California in some ways, the Cal Guns Foundation, they protect, anybody involved in self-defense shootings. They litigate a lot of the unconstitutional firearms laws of California Act, which unfortunately have become more stringent since I left. So they do all kinds of stuff. So there's a huge movement there. Unfortunately, California is, and I'm afraid, as far as I can see at this point, will be a test bed for policies. I'm fortunate here in Arizona where we are, as far as I can remember, unrestricted in every respect. I mean, I can ride around with a loaded rifle sticking out my window. I've been pulled over in my Jeep with my suppressed SBR mounted to the dash on the passenger side and got nothing but a question of, you know, whether it's loaded or not, and not that it really made a difference to the trooper in that case. So, we're fortunate in that regard. I don't see the laws changing. People are generally responsible with them. Surprisingly, the crime rates aren't through the roof, if you can imagine that. So, California, to that point, California is an odd place, and they're only getting more socked in, but there's loopholes around it. We talked about, you asked about ammo. When I lived in LA, I mean, downtown, middle of LA, you know, the address was Los Angeles, California, 90007. I used to buy off cheaper than dirt, and they wouldn't ship. Los Angeles has restrictions on shipping into the city. And so cheaper than dirt wouldn't ship to Los Angeles proper. Now, if you lived in one of the suburbs, they would, but they just go by the name. So somehow I got the idea, if you look at the post office, if you search it at the time, I don't know if it still does, would show up as Dockweiler Post Office. And so, and it would show Dockweiler, California, even though it's in Los Angeles. So when I would order ammo, and I say this because I think the statutes are up, I know Arizona's not going to extradite me, but, I started putting, when I'd order ammo, I'd put Dockweiler, California, 90007, and it would override the system and I could get my ammo delivered, to my door. So, there's ridiculous stuff like that where you just kind of have to find your way around it. I guess once an outlaw, always an outlaw, but that's just the way it goes there.
That's right. Now, you're talking about being in Arizona. I've got a good friend of mine that lives in Tucson, and he goes to Big Sandy every year and all that. Have you been up to the Big Sandy shoot yet?
I have not. I seem to always miss it. I'll log in online and see something posted about it like the week after. but I never see the promo material. So, I do a lot of shooting. I haven't done Big Sandy, but I do a lot of training with Independence Training here in Arizona. They do it all over the country. They're phenomenal. We do a lot of the medical side. I spent several years in the medical field. So do a lot of the medical side with them, the firearms. And we do some stuff as well on the border.
You brought up competition shooting. What kind of competition shooting do you do?
I've done some two-gun stuff. I haven't gotten a three-gun. It doesn't interest me too much. So it's two gun. There's like Tuesday night, Wednesday night steel matches here.
Have you ever got like IDPA or USPSA yet?
I have not. I haven't invested a lot of time into it. Like I said, almost everything I've done has been with the group that I run with. I haven't ventured outside of that much. So I don't. When I say that, please don't get the idea that I'm a competitive shooter with all the gear. And I use my practical gear. All the duty gear. Armor if that's called for, and we do some stuff. There's also like Desert Brutality. So they do that like early, middle summer. They do a July 4th brutality match. So it's an all day course setup where you're just your full gear, armor, the whole gear, whatever your loadout is, and they have different classes and whatnot. But stuff like that, which is just, it's a ton of fun. It's brutal, but it gives you a chance to shake down your skills and really kind of test yourself. I mean, if you haven't been working out, I mean, you're in the mountains and it's 110 degrees, you're not going to make it too far. Or at the very worst, you're just not going to be happy with your results. So, just stuff like that, just stuff to keep it going, keep active, kind of give the workouts that I do and the training I do, an end.
So you guys are doing training. Now this outfit, are you working for a group that does training, you said?
I've done some RSO work with Independence Training. It's run by Glenn Stilson, John Penix, and a few other guys who work for him. His cadre of instructors, a lot of them are SF guys or lifelong Marine Corps guys. He runs the gamut. There's Josh, who was a 75th shooter in the 75th. So He's got a whole group of guys. I've done some RSO work for him. And like I said, done some medical stuff as well. My best friend does a lot of their head medical stuff. He was a combat medic in the 101st with the deployment to Afghanistan. So, I met into these guys. I met them volunteering. It's probably been 5 years ago now. I was bored one summer just sitting around. It's like June or July. And I was like, man, I've got to get out and do something. I literally logged onto AR15.com and saw this post about, need some volunteers for this event. It's a machine gun shoot, full auto. You'll get to shoot them, just come help set stuff up, take it down. I was like, oh, that doesn't sound like too bad a thing if you're going to waste a couple hours. So, food's provided, all kinds of stuff. I was like, yeah, I'm there, man. So I sent the guy a message and he's like, yeah, be here this time, just whatever. And so, they've actually turned out to be my core group of friends now. So, that's basically it. That's my extent of shooting and work, with that. So, again, I'm not super deep into it. These guys are professionals. I mean, this is how they make their living. So certainly not diminishing that. I have a full-time job and I get my practical experience and education where I can with these guys, but they're really good at what they do.
Being in the medical background, from your experience, obviously it's important, but do you think that medical training is just as important or more important than the actual handling of a firearm?
Yes. In short, yes, absolutely. I got my EMT in 2014. I spent 2.5 years at a level one pediatric trauma center as a trauma tech. I love that part of it. I got out of it. I went on to do something else, but I've stayed current. I've kept my certifications. I still train and do those things. The shooting is a fun part, and that's the part that draws people in. It's kind of like, stupid analogy, I guess, but race car driving, right? Like everybody likes the sound and the smell of gas and going fast. But, again, if you're not wearing a seatbelt and you don't have a helmet and like all this stuff, like you're not going to make it too far. Now, hopefully on your training, right, it's you're not having these incidents where you're needing all this stuff. But the fact of the matter is the real world is you're a lot more likely to get into a car accident. You're a lot more likely to run across a pedestrian who's been hit by a car, or God forbid you get into a shooting or defensive situation or a mass casualty incident. That stuff is going to serve you. Even if you are in a firefight, the fact of the matter is it's not going to last very long. Right. And hopefully it lasts a lot, hopefully it's shorter than it takes you to run out of ammo. But the fact of the matter is after that, there's probably going to be some cleanup to do. And it's going to require you to intervene in a much more important, I dare say, important way, which is saving lives, being able to prevent preventable deaths or delay the inevitable until somebody can come along and help with better equipment and better knowledge. I have a somewhat introductory or basic level medical training. There are so many good classes that people can do to stop the bleed. May was National Stop the Bleed Month. There are a ton of free courses. And if I can, training, it's Independence Training. It's trainingaz.com. It's Independence Training on Instagram, or the Arms Room Show as well as Glenn and John's radio podcast. I think you guys would link up great. But they did, I want to say a dozen or more classes for free in the state of Arizona over May. And it's like a dollar otherwise. So these courses are going on everywhere. I'd advise people, you go in, they provide tourniquets, they provide wound packing materials, and they spend 2 hours going over how to apply these things, where to source materials, how to pack wounds properly, how to assess people, how to do quick triage. People think these are like really complicated, and they're not. If you can learn CPR, and everybody should learn CPR. In fact, I think it should be a mandatory curriculum in high schools and junior highs. I think if you can learn that, you can learn stop the bleed. And really, the equipment's not that expensive. A Gen 7 CAT tourniquet from North American Rescue is $30. There's probably some programs where you can find those at a good deal. Find those, keep them stocked, learn how to use them. Find some expired materials for way cheaper and practice with them. But without getting on a heavy rant here, absolutely. I mean, people take the time. Go do your basic CPR class. Learn continuous compressions. And how to do those things. Survival rates go up way up. So, and again, in your day-to-day, it's going to serve you much better than a fully loaded kit, with level 4 armor and all the magazines you can handle and the sweetest optics. And, you know, if you had a D ball, like what, yeah, those are cool, but night vision's not going to help you, you know, when you really need it, in the middle of town. So I would always advise people, you know, medical knowledge is basic. You can take it really quick. You can learn it. And it will carry over into literally everything you do ever. I know a ton of guys who are into scuba diving or into some sort of specialized event where they've done a lot of training to learn that. You add medical training on top of that, you are invaluable to a lot of people. So if it's one of those things like, hey, you're one of those guys, you're not really sure what you want to do, you don't want to work a 9-to-5, go get your EMT, go get your advanced EMT, and get some skills. You want to be on a wildland crew and you're an EMT, dude, you can walk in and make a lot of money. And same goes for, like I said, scuba diving or a lot of other specialized tasks, where they need guys with medical training who know how to apply it. And have just really, all these are guys who've taken the time, to sit down, and source the information and just learn it.
Absolutely. Kind of transitioning, I like to ask like a kind of a series of questions to all my guests, if you don't mind, kind of go through them here. And we're going to talk a little bit. The first one is, what areas of shooting do you enjoy?
I would say AR. I do less of that than anything else. I'd say handgun is probably my most common. But again, that's one, you know, I carry it every day. I've got it with me. And it's generally cheaper and easier to get done. I enjoy, in terms of like movement stuff, AR is definitely my favorite. I haven't been hunting in a long time. I grew up doing it. I think I would enjoy it more now. Just being older and like being able to, it's one of those things, you know, as a kid, it's like, oh my God, I gotta get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, we would go to Ballinger, Texas as a kid, way out in central Texas. And, you know, we do dove, quail and deer out there. And then we go to Kansas for pheasant, but yeah, we go deer hunting, man. And, you know, come in at 4 o'clock in the morning, wake me up. It's dark as hell, cold. You know, grandma had this big drafty house. We were way up at the top of it, just colder than hell. And, like, oh my God, it's miserable. And you go out there and, you know, you're sitting in the blind, the sun still hasn't come up and it's, you know, you're just freezing and, you know, it's just brutal. But now, hell, I'm up that early anyway. And it's like, how nice is that to be able to go out and just sit in the quiet in the middle of nowhere and actually, you know, again, it's, for guys who've done a lot of stuff, I mean, I've played in front of 100,000 plus people, millions of people on TV. It's hard to find an adrenaline rush like waiting for a deer to walk in. So I haven't done enough hunting. In real terms, that's probably my favorite. I just don't do it enough anymore. It's at Arizona hunting, it's really unfamiliar to me. I've got a lot of friends who do it. I actually put in for the first time for tags out here. So we'll see if it holds up to what I remember. But yeah, I love that part of it. So again, I'm taking a long walk to a little house here, but ARs, I love, the practical application of it is, you know, unless you're out looking for trouble, is pretty slim. And hunting is probably my dead favorite. I still got a 1975 Winchester Model 77 mil rim mag. It's got the scope has dents in it. I don't think it's ever been re-zeroed and the thing's dead nuts at 300. So, it's a fun gun to break out. My AR is fun. I love breaking out the 7 mag 26 inch barrel. And like this thing, all right, the AR is cool, but this thing is like, shit's about to get real. So,
all right. So that's my next question. Of all the firearms that you have, barring ammo costs or anything like that, what is your favorite gun? If like I said, ammo costs, availability is not a problem. What's your favorite firearm? That you have.
Oh, I've actually downsized considerably. I have, you know, the 7mm rim mag. I've got, you know, my old air gun, 12 gauge that I had as a kid. And then I've got 11.5 inch SBR, you know, suppressed. And then my Glock 17, I would take my AR. I mean, it's a practical all around, setup. You can change it, the modularity of it. I'd probably go with that. Now, if I had to pick up one, and I've looked at this, I just have to. Yeah, that's a tough one. Honestly, if I could find, and I know, so I'll say it just because this actually exists. I want a 12.5 inch AR-10, just loaded. I mean, like the nice thing you can find, but like a short barrel. But honestly, if I could have like a 10.5 inch 308 to just, you know, get to town with, Now you could get ridiculous if you were talking like multi thousands of, you know, long range six and a halves. Yeah, all day long, right? With $3,000 optics on it. That's cool. It's not a world I've ventured a bunch. I've played with weapons like that and they're amazing. It's just not something I've touched. So I'm giving you a really lame answer for what I do right now and what I'd want to train with. If I get a 10.5 inch 308 that was reliable, I would be pumped, you know, with a 25 round mag. That'd be pretty dope. I will say, if I throw an addendum and then I'll ask you what yours is, mine would be a short barrel M60. I got a chance to, like I said, we do some full auto stuff. So we've got, you know, short M60s, 249s, 240s, the whole gamut. The M60 is still my favorite. Just that slow pace, you know, just thump, thump, thump. You know, it's really distinct, and, you know, what's more badass than having belts slung over you, you know, big rounds like that. That'd be dope. I mean, I'd love to have one of those. We always joke. I did some bounty hunting for a while. We still do. It's fun. You know, we did it. It wasn't for money for us. So the same group of guys that I'm talking about, we got a group together, and we all got licensed, which it's frighteningly simple, but, again, professional group, so we weren't a bunch of jackasses. There was a group here who hit the Phoenix police chiefs. Somebody called a bad tip into them, and they hit the Phoenix police chief's house. And that didn't go very well for them. So, but we had a group. There was about a year there when I was in transition between work, doing some other stuff, and I had a ton of time to kill. And it was me and this core group that I've told you about. We just started picking up files, and we got tied in with a bail bond company here, one of the bigger ones. And we would do the recoveries for them. And we always joke like how great it'd be just to pop up with some M60s and stuff like that. I mean, just totally ridiculous stuff, but, we would never actually do that. But, it was interesting work. You know, it's a real eye opener. It teaches you, you know, if you're good at talking to people and networking, and building relationships in the community, you can be very good at it. We do a little bit on the side, but it's fun work. It's dangerous work. So you really have to be smart, and you have to be cautious. But, man, I'm telling you, if you really want some experience, if you can get in with some guys who are good at it and who you can trust, it's a real eye opener in terms of the conditions of the cities you're in. You know, get off your comfortable chair and really see what people are living with and some of the problems that are facing, you know, not only the city, you know, your city or Phoenix in particular, or Little Rock or whatever it may be, but really you want to see the drug epidemic. You want to see what's facing people, what the police are dealing with. You want to see what everybody's having to legislate and build policy around. It's a good way to do it with some credibility. And again, if you can be smart and treat people right, it's not a bad gig. I don't think I'd want to make a living at it, but it was good for what it was.
Well, and there's a lot of people that don't understand that they bitch and moan about the way their life goes for them sometimes. But until they kind of see the underbelly of what really is going on out there, they don't understand how good they have it.
Yeah, you're exactly right on that. I mean, you know, how many days I'm like, man, you know, God, today was tough. I'm like, really? I drive around and talk to people and take them to lunch and, like, you know, get to come home early and hop on a gun podcast. Like, life's not that bad, but I figured out. And again, I worked in healthcare, and I see a lot of the same stuff. And you draw. I mean, it's a humbling experience in a lot of ways. You know, you have to, because there's people you don't like. You have to help. There's people who you can't help that you wish you could help. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different range. You know, a large range of experience and issues. One of the things I picked up doing the bounty stuff. And I was talking about some of the homeless. I mean, some of the kindest, most intelligent people I ever met were people living on the streets of Phoenix, who genuinely cared about what was going on, who knew a ton of stuff. I mean, I'm telling you, you think people aren't watching you? They're watching, and they know what's going on. But I realized pretty quick, you know, we're all just like one short wire away, or, you know, I think the biggest thing that keeps people afloat, and this is, you know, there's plenty of research to back this up, but your social network is really what keeps you going. If you get on a hard time, right, having family, having friends that can maybe take you in, help you go, help you find jobs, whatever it may be. And there's some people out there, they're not necessarily mentally ill. They're not drug addicts necessarily. They're just people who got down their luck and didn't have the support network. And I think, again, one of the things like I said, when you get out and see it, it's hard to get out of that, right? You get into that cycle where once you don't have a home, and it's, you don't have transportation, it's hard to get a job. It's hard to keep a job. It's hard to pay bills, you know, or it's hard to get back on your feet. So, yeah, I would encourage people, just keep that in mind, man. Stop and talk to people, help people out, you know, and fit that in, right? Do some service and see where you can help in your community. Because the fact of the matter is, you know, if you don't help and everybody has that attitude, then your community is going to get worse and it only makes it harder for you. So, I guess, sidebar for your podcast here, you know, people get out, get some medical training, do some volunteer service, see what's going on, where you can help. You can't do, you know, maybe you can't do a lot. You can't influence legislation, but you know, if you can help a few people, maybe help point them in the right direction. I mean, I don't think people day to day realize how much they really have at their fingertips. Right. I mean, you look at a guy like you with a podcast like this, you probably got a lot of contacts all around the place. You know, it's just people who listen to what your show and may think, you know, oh, hey, I can help with that. Right. So like, hey, Trey can't do anything or Mitch can't do anything, but I know a guy who might be able to help you. So just, you know, see where you can help out and go from there. But anyway, that was what the bounty stuff really opened our eyes to that. And we've since enacted a lot of stuff that I won't really get into, but you know, being able to kind of direct policy on that and help people in different ways, just based on what we experienced and what we saw in that regard. So, you know, there's always something to take away from it outside the work. Having those issues, so we picked those up, but I think it's a good segue for physical training. And I think that's another part of the firearms community that is getting better, but still needs to be tied in, right? I mean, it's, you can shoot all one, right? And again, everybody preps for this, and I don't think there's a problem for that. You know, have the gear, have the training to use the gear, by all means. I mean, I'm not one of these guys who, you know, being a lifelong civilian, having not served, I think civilians should have access to, you know, to armor and to military equipment and gear and all the latest, coolest stuff, right? You know, all the cool camo patterns and the practical stuff. I mean, these exist for a reason because they're useful to somebody. But then you see a lot of these same guys who will spend literally thousands and thousands of dollars on kit, not have the physical prowess or the physical setup or the physical training. I give a little leeway to guys who've served before just because generally they've been through it. And so even if they have to deal with it, I've seen a lot of my friends who are veterans who are maybe a little out of shape. Like, they can still suck it up because they've been there before. It's kind of like an old athlete.
I'm a little out of shape, but I'd like to think if shit hit the fan, I will be able to do a little bit, you know?
Yeah, tactics and proficiency make up for a little bit of that. You know, I compare it to an old athlete, right? Like, you still got it. You may be out of shape, but like you still understand some of the shortcuts and some of the tricks.
Still throw football the best of my bet if you had to.
Right. It's like I can still run and play, and like I don't think, you know, I may have to learn to get hit again. That's the big thing, but like I can still play the game. But again, physical training is a huge deal, man. I mean, you know, it's 100 degrees right now in Phoenix. It's only getting hotter. And this is weather. I mean, there's people dying literally in town on mountainsides because they go up with not enough water. They're out of shape. They overestimate their abilities. You know, and so I may be talking to a smaller segment of your audience here, but.
Oh, I love it. We have everyone. I mean, like I said, we're a big training guy. So we have a lot of people that do training. So it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, get in there, do sprints. There's a 6-week sprint training program on T-Nation that I did last year. It was phenomenal. And I did it in the middle of summer. I go out 3 o'clock on the canal, hotter than shit. And, just run. I mean, it sucked, but I felt as good as I've ever felt. You know, it burns fat. You feel good. You're confident that, hey, I can survive the heat. I'm in shape. You know, and so, and again, and you know this, when you put on your kit and you put on armor and you got to put on your belt and your pants are uncomfortable and your boots are a little heavy, it's like, man, I really don't want to be doing this right now, but I'm confident I can do it. Otherwise, you know, you're going to end up with issues. And I'm just talking about guys, again, I'm sure there's a segment of your audience who does it for a living. You know, guys who are cops or maybe are military or reserve, whatever it may be. And so they more or less, you know, may or not know that, may or may not understand a lot of this, but you know, you're only going to help yourself, right? Putting a little bit of the suffering, you know, a little bit at a time so that when you do have to do the work, you know, you have to put your armor on and all that stuff. It's not as bad. It's always going to suck, I guess, but one of the things I've wanted to get into, and maybe you've had some experience or some of your audience, you're like back into martial arts. I did a little bit in college. I think it's not only a huge performance, but huge morale booster, being able to feel confident with your body. The bounty hunting stuff, one of the biggest things and reason I brought this up when you brought that, it's a good, the more imposing you can look, the less likely you are to get into a fight. And this is, it's very evident in that world. If you look serious, if you're dressed sharp and your hair's cut, if you're well-groomed and your body looks like you're serious and you take care of yourself, people really don't want to fight with you that much. Right. You can see it a lot where they'll size it up, man. Like, do I want to run? Do I really want to throw a punch right here? Like, there's 2-3 guys here that are 220, 240 pounds each. Is this really something I'll get into? Where, again, if you come in sloppy, if you come in not really carrying yourself, like you're confident and like you've prepared for this moment, people are going to test you. Like I said, a lot of these people are on drugs. They don't want to go back to jail.
For their lives almost to a certain extent.
Absolutely. And it's nonsense. And you see it all day long. I mean, how many cops get killed for stupid shit, right? I mean, it's like, oh, he stopped him for a registration and all he was going to do is write a ticket, right? But a guy has a warrant and he knows it and he didn't want to go back to jail for a year or even for 6 months or something ridiculous, right? And or who knows what, right? People just have issues.
And you brought up confidence, which is a great thing, because the stronger you are, the better shape you are, like you said, the more confident you are in yourself. But that's not just good for the physical side. That's good for the mental side. Is when someone's confident, chances are they're not going to have that hair trigger temper. They're confident in themselves that there might be another way out of this than lethal force. Now, obviously, if you have to use lethal force to defend yourself, family, or someone else because there's an imminent threat, then you're confident and proficient in the firearms enough to know to take that shot. But like you said, sometimes it's okay to get into a fight instead of pulling your gun. I like to carry a gun as a last resort. I'm already confident enough that if I get into a scrap, I'm still strong enough, I'm still relatively agile enough, and I've been trained enough that I'm not really worried about, even a guy that's 6'2", 6'3", that's 220, I know that there are ways to get around that and to be able to at least, if nothing else, eliminate the threat.
Yeah, and that's one of the best ways to do that is get the hell out of there. I mean, that's right. Like, hey, no way out. Find a way out if you can.
Then you can run to get the hell away from them sometimes.
I mean, drive off. You see all the time, if there is one thing here, it's the road rage, right? I mean, it's like, dude, there's no reason. I mean, I get upset with people, but it's like, okay. But like you said, like when you have a gun on, it changes your frame of mind where it's like, all right, I'm glad I have this, but could I articulate this? Yeah, probably. Do I really want the scrutiny and to go under all this right now and really jack up not only my day, but my immediate future? Like probably not. So can I find a way out of this? But it goes back. I mean, it's not a binary issue. It's not shoot or don't shoot. It's all these factors we've just talked about. Yeah, being confident in your gear, being confident in yourself, your physical abilities, being confident in the way you speak to people, offering them, right? Like proposing solutions to ways out of this, right? I mean, I've been in issues where, maybe some drunk guy wanted to fight me. I mean, I had to pull my pistol one time that I remember off the top of my head for this one at a bar where this dude just was like, I was with friends, totally unrelated to this guy. We'd never said a word, and all he just decided he wanted to have a fight, and actually followed me to my car. And that was one of those times where it's like, man, I really don't, So it's just, hey, I'm gonna offer a couple of ways out of this for both of us before we have to go on to. And a lot of people, I think, what happens? You talk about this, one of the best things you could do, and really a lot of ways. We talk about sports, we talk about medicine, we talk about anything really performance related. Mental reps are hugely underrated. Put yourself in these situations, right? I spent 4 years doing incident command training with firefighters here in the Valley. Go through these exercises in your head, right? Like, what are all the common scenarios you might run into? And go through them in your head and play different options, right? And try to be, don't slow walk through them, but try to play it in real time. Like, hey, this happens, and you can put in all these different factors and really start playing through them in your head. Like, what are my options here? What would I do here? And really assessing where you're at with that. But yeah, as we talked about, it's not a binary issue. All those factors play into it. And being able to talk, being able to use your equipment, being able to use your body, Because at the end of the day, yeah, it's you want to protect yourself and protect the people around you, even your property, if that's the case. But there's definitely an escalation you can go through and just practice those things, man. You know, the firearms training is one part of it. But yeah, if you're confident with your body, those are the dudes that scare me.
I think a lot of what you're saying is, you know, you can be a big dude. You can be like me. I'm 5'8", 165. I'm that guy. It really doesn't matter what the size you are. If you're physically fit, you're mentally strong, and you know how to handle your body. And I think that that's probably where athleticism comes into play as well, is most good athletes can kind of make their bodies do what they want it to easier.
I want to tie into what we talk about, you know, with the guns. Like, you think Jerry Mitchellek couldn't pick up any piece of crap gun in the world and just absolutely thrash with it? I mean, right? I mean, it doesn't matter for him because it's the tool is totally secondary to what he does and what he knows. His knowledge and his practice and his confidence mean everything. So he could literally pick up any gun, I'm confident of this, and just he could outshoot anybody with it. And so, you know, I mean, the guy, you give him a pellet gun, he'll find a way to do what he needs to do with it. So, yeah, I, you know, not to beat the horse, but it's I think you're right. Confidence, I think, ties in with firearms 100%. Know your equipment, know your body. And yeah, the less you have to use it, the better. And that way, when you do have to use it, you're right in your wheelhouse. And it gives you the comfort of knowing you've done everything you can to find another option. So if you do have to, you know, God forbid, get into that situation, you can do it with a clear mind, and it's time to get to work, and you can just start, you know, doing what you need to do.
Now, you talked earlier about the Glock 17, and you've had to pull your gun one time. I'm assuming you carry. Maybe not every day, but you do carry?
Yeah, I do. Admittedly, you know, first sec here, don't carry as much as I used to, just for work. You know, if I'm wearing something where it's somewhat prohibitive. But it's usually on me in my bag around, which, you know, again, is a little comfort when you need it now. I used to carry a lot more, but yeah, I mean, it's unrestricted here. You don't need a permit. You don't need, I mean, you can OC, you can conceal carry, you can do whatever. But yeah, I definitely carry it on me. I don't know too many people who don't, at least in terms of my circle that I run with.
So let me ask you this, and being the Armed Citizen podcast, I like to ask this to all my guests as well. What do the words armed citizen mean to you?
Well, I think it ties in a lot with what we just talked about. It means, you know, having the equipment, having the training, whether you're self-taught or whether you seek it out with professional help. It means being active in the fight, you know, joining Firearms Policy Coalition or whatever your local group may be. And not guys that are just getting around drinking beer, talking, you know, bitching about what's going on, and all the infringements, the 2A infringements, brother. But, you know, actually getting together and finding solutions and getting with the representatives or electing representatives that are going to match what your desires are. I think those all tie in, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some of it. It means being vigilant, to tie in what we, you know, again, with what we talk about, being aware of what's going on, making things, you know, within reason, but, you know, making things your business. Not letting, I talked a little bit, I was on a radio show back home, not long ago. We were talking about some politics and, you know, just Trump, anti-Trump stuff. But a lot of the degradation we see is the people recusing themselves of personal responsibility, and really shirking that off and saying, well, that's not my problem, right? That's the police department's problem, or that's my neighbor's problem. Well, if that's the attitude everybody takes, again, that's what you get. And then we get a world where the police have to do everything and then nobody likes it. I think it's taking over that responsibility, being vigilant, knowing what your neighbors are, you know, not being nosy and a jerk, but helping them take care of their stuff, right? Like, my neighbors are gone to Alaska all summer. I watch their house, right? We all do. All our neighbors around here, like, we keep an eye out. We know who's supposed to be there, who's not. And again, it's being smart. It's being a good ambassador for the community. And it's weird that that is a thing, right? It's a constitutional right. So it's kind of weird that there's like a subculture about it. But, you know, being a good ambassador for that and being smart in your conversations, understanding the issues. So again, I'm beating it all up, but I think that's what it entails. So not only owning a gun, and using it occasionally, but all the other attendant factors with it, and just being, again, being in shape, and I use that with air quotes, just all around in your life. It's one thing to own a gun. It's another thing to have to use it. And there's a big, it's not just one step from one to the other. I think you and I've kind of covered that. It's a whole lot of things between that from one part to the next. Well, and I'll say this, knowing your limitations, being that guy who says, that's not me, I'm not going to do that. I totally respect that. Right. I'd much rather, and I've had guys do that. They're like, I ventured into it. I got to be honest. I wish, I just can't do that. It's not for me. So I don't carry a gun because of this. But they're not out beating the drum against everybody else. At the very least, don't cause more damage. So
that's part of being a responsible gun owner, is it not? Being it doesn't mean you have to carry every day. Like you said, you can own a lot of guns and be proficient, but if carrying is not your gig, then I think that is part of being responsible, saying, hey, this just isn't for me. I don't care if you carry. I hope you do. It's just not for me. I think that's a huge part of it. That's a great point.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, again, know your limitations, know what you can get into. Don't go looking for trouble if you don't have to. Be smart about what you get into. But that's kind of my assessment of it. I think people should be active, and they should be, unobnoxious about it, I guess, to a degree. But
there's a lot of people in our culture, in our community, that are the shall not be infringed from my cold dead hands. And I get it. I don't want any infringements, but I'm also the one, I don't think the boogeyman's coming for our guns either.
I think what we're seeing, if you look at policies throughout the country, and if you look at the trends over the last few years, it's actually going the other direction. It's going in the direction supporting the Second Amendment. There are court cases that have been decided in favor, big ones that have been decided in favor or have been remanded back for review. And so, and there's a huge, I think there's a huge segment of Americans, even ones like the ones we just talked about, who don't necessarily carry every day and don't do the things that we do, who are just tired of people telling them what they can and can't do to take care of their own stuff. The fact of the matter is, I think people are just sick of being beat with policies and with finger wagging, and that sort of thing. So I think we're seeing the things start to trickle back, but then there's areas like we talked about that are highly influential, Chicago, California, and some of the major areas that are really going to continue to push. And there are people there who really do think that you shouldn't own a gun, and that you're a terrible person for even considering it. So, again, being vigilant against that, being smart and being articulate in the case for it, and pushing back. People should err on the side of greater freedom and less restrictions. And really, again, it goes back to just being vigilant and taking on a lot of the problems yourself, and being supportive in your own community. And knowing who these people are, finding alternatives to get them help. I mean, again, we could go for days and days about how we're going to do that. And there's ways we could mitigate that, and not to get into the mental health debate and all this other crap that you see with shootings. I mean, it looks like right now we're going to have to fight Donald Trump for suppressors. So, that's a big thing that kicked off yesterday or today. And again, it's just being good ambassadors and being a good voice for what's going on. And the fact of the matter is, you're going to have to defend the right. And that's, it sounds crazy, but that's just the world we live in. And so people have to be okay with that. But again, without getting on tangent, yeah, I agree with you 100%. There are people I really don't want around. I hope they have a gun, and I'm glad they do. Do your thing, man. But I don't want to be around you.
Well, Mitch, I really appreciate you coming on. A fascinating life that you've had. You've had some crazy things that have happened throughout your sporting life and your personal life. It's awesome to know that, you were this football player and this golden child of the golden arm and all of that. And for me to sit there and watch a documentary and see the guns, like, okay, this is awesome. You don't think of most football players and athletes, they spend so much time honing their individual skills, you don't think of them as having other hobbies. And it's kind of cool. And to now talk to you and know that you've got the medical background and you've done the bounty hunting, the life within the gun culture that you've led is truly amazing as well. Man, thank you so much for coming on. We really do appreciate it.
You bet, Trey. I appreciate you having me on.
And guys, make sure you go check out, if you're a football player, a football fan, and you remember Mitch's name, go check out The Identity Theft of Mitch Mustang. It's kind of an interesting thing, but you're also going to see what I saw. You're going to see a bunch of guns that are back there. And that's kind of what kind of piqued my interest. I was like, okay, this looks like a cool guy. It's not just this football player. There's some actual substance to this guy. So a great conversation. And guys, thank you guys for always listening to the Armed Citizen Podcast. We will see you soon. Semper Fi.
Thanks for listening to the Armed Citizen Podcast. To check out our full lineup of pro-gun media content, including our product reviews, live shows, and other Second Amendment activity, please check out our website, www.ghosttacticalproductions.com.